Menopause. It's scary for everyone involved. The effects of hormones on a woman's body are impossible to ignore. Most women will experience uncomfortable hot flashes, mood swings, difficulty sleeping, and may have depression. Despite these issues, many women can cope with all of this as long as they know what's happening, and that's why it's important to understand how to diagnose menopause. In today's JAMA Clinical Reviews, Diagnosing the Onset of Menopause.
From the JAMA Network, this is JAMA Clinical Reviews, interviews and ideas about innovations in medicine, science, and clinical practice. Here's your host, Ed Livingston.
On July 22, 2019, JAMA published an article online entitled Diagnosing the Onset of Menopause, written by an expert in the subject. Let's meet her.
I'm Nanette Santoro, and I'm professor and E. Stuart Taylor Chair of Obstetrics and Gynecology at the University of Colorado School of Medicine.
Well, let's just start with, what is menopause, and can you describe its basic physiology?
Sure. For many women, it's a milestone in a psychological sense because it marks the end of any possible reproduction because menstrual periods cease. And physiologically, it really marks a focal point at which estrogen production reaches its most rapid decline and becomes minimal for women for the rest of their lives. It's not just estrogen that decreases, it's also progesterone, because all of the processes that women have lived with for about 40 years, such as a regular menstrual cycle, stop completely. We don't know as much about those other hormone changes, so a lot of the thinking is that it's most of what we see happening before and after menopause are estrogen related. With those changes also come a host of symptoms, and those have been broken down into different categories. There are some that are most clearly related to estrogen withdrawal, and those are treatable with hormones, and there are others that are not, and that may be related to other parts of the process.
What sort of symptoms do women have?
There's four cardinal symptoms that I call the core four, because in 2005, there was an NIH conference that brought people from around the world that looked at worldwide studies of menopause to gather data on what kinds of symptoms happen, how many women reported them, how universal they were, and how likely they were to reverse with estrogen. So the core four are hot flashes and night sweats, number one. About 85% of women will report them. And of those, that proportion of women, two-thirds will call them moderate to severe. So they're disruptive for a very large number of women. Vaginal dryness and painful intercourse happens in about, variable estimates, 25 to 45% of women. And that's a symptom that doesn't go away over time. So if that's bothersome for women, it requires ongoing treatment. Sleep disturbances have been linked to the menopause transition into menopause, and adverse mood. So as women are traversing menopause, they can have increases in depression and anxiety. And the onset of new depression, first episode, is more frequent in the menopausal transition. So those four symptoms are the ones that I will really look for when I have a patient who has menopausal symptoms, although there are many other oddball ones or things that just crop up that may in fact be related to the transition. So sometimes my patients teach me.
So the article that you've published in JAMA is entitled Diagnosing Menopause. And those symptoms are all fairly dramatic. So why is it hard to diagnose menopause? Why do we need a test to diagnose menopause?
There's a couple of reasons. One is that many women want to have more information about the duration of their symptoms. So a lot of patients will come in, it's estimated in different populations, about two-thirds of women will actually have a visit to a healthcare provider to talk about their menopausal process. In my own practice, I see many patients, and about a third of them leave my office with no prescription, just content to know that what they're going through is normal. So in a way, it's something that's not talked about enough, so that women don't have enough information about what am I in for? What can I expect? How long is this going to last? Is this going to get worse? And being able to pinpoint or anchor the actual date at menopause, when the final menstrual period will happen, actually helps you predict on either side of that transition. from the study of women's health across the nation, SWAN, there was an important paper that came out that looked at the concept that if your menopausal transition begins earlier, so you haven't had your final menstrual period yet, but that's preceded by a series of irregular cycles and some disruption and symptoms that come and go. So when they're subtle, many women may not quite know what's going on. Their migraine headaches could be getting worse. They're noticing that they're sweaty at night, but they're not recognizing this or calling it as a hot flash because they could be as early as in their late 30s. Those early onset transitions tend to be the longer and more bothersome ones. So women that have onset early may be looking at 10 to 12 or more years of hot flashes. A patient who can find that out earlier in the game by being able to forecast when her menopause will happen may be better able to make decisions.
How do you make the diagnosis?
A lot of the time it's doable by using menstrual pattern. So if a woman is having some changes in her menstrual pattern, and the epidemiologic definition is if your menstrual cycle length changes by more than 7 days, but pretty much that's only relevant for epidemiologists and accountants because not that many people track their menstrual cycles that assiduously. But for women that are cycling regularly and having a menstrual period every month, they might skip one menstrual period, but they don't skip two. They have, if they're in that ballpark, they're still in that early part of the menopausal transition. That means that they've got a way to go. So based on their age and when they make the next transition, you can forecast when menopause will happen. But it's not until they reach the late part of the transition, which is defined by about 60 days of amenorrhea, that you're really able to predict. By the time a woman hits that milestone, she's very likely, 95% so, to have her final menstrual period within the next 4 years. That's the best that epidemiology can do. And for women that have certain conditions, very severe symptoms, they're challenging to treat, or they have a gynecologic condition and they need to make a decision as to what to do, 4 years is too long. So then we start to invoke some biochemical testing. The biochemical test that can be done, the traditional one has been FSH or follicle stimulating hormone, but it lets us down in a couple of different settings. In the first case, because it's pituitary, it's not telling us exactly what's happening in the ovary, and menopause really is essentially ultimately an ovarian process. It's the exhaustion of the follicle supply. So FSH can be misleading if there's separate pituitary issues, such as prolactin disorders or something that would cause FSH to be inappropriately low. And we also know that FSH will vary from cycle to cycle in a woman. And if you really want to get a valid level, you need to get it close to the time of a menstrual period. So trying to get an irregularly menstruating woman in to get her FSH close to her menstrual period, knowing that it's variable, makes it a less than ideal test. The most recent test that's come along and has now been approved by the FDA for the use in diagnosing menopause is AMH or anti-mullerian hormone. And it has features that are more attractive than FSH because it is a direct product of the granulosa cells that surround the ovarian follicle and constitute the follicle in its earliest stages of growth. So while it doesn't tell us what the primordial follicle pool is, those super early ones that haven't even activated, it gives us a much better reflection of what that is. And if you have a sensitive enough assay, you can now predict on the basis of age and AMH the date of the final menstrual period with a greater degree of accuracy than has been previously done.
So how good is that test?
It's partly dependent on age. If you're 49 to 50 and you have an undetectable AMH level, depending on the correct assay and you need to use the ultra-sensitive one to know this, you can predict menopause will happen. Your final menstrual period will happen within 6 to 12 months. And that's a clinically useful piece of information for patients who are contemplating, for example, a hysterectomy for heavy menstrual bleeding. If they know it's only 6 more months to 12 months, they may choose medical therapy and avoid the hysterectomy because their bleeding will stop. If it's going to be longer than that, a high AMH also tells you that menopause won't happen for a certain period of time. So for women that are looking to preserve reproduction or who wish to delay the menopause for whatever reason, they'll be reassured by a higher level. So both high and low levels can be helpful.
So is that test widely available?
It is. It is. It has been FDA approved, so it's out there.
So could you give me some scenarios where a physician might order that? What is it a woman presents to a physician that would prompt a physician to order that test?
I have a practice that I'm kind of specialized in menopause, so I see a lot of patients that have symptoms that are bothersome. And a lot of my patients want to know, you know, what am I in for? How long will this last? And by adding an AMH, it helps me figure out how much longer this process is going to go on for them. So if they already enter my office with tremendous symptom burden and their AMH level is relatively high and it's not predictive of menopause happening within, for example, the next year, that's a patient that in a shared decision-making model that helps inform us in terms of, you know, what kinds of treatment may be appropriate for her and the fact that she probably does need treatment because it's going to be dragging on longer than she can probably tolerate. And then together we'll make the decision, you know, you're looking at a few more years of this at least, you know, what do you want to, these are the options, which of these options look like they're going to work best for you.
Is this the sort of thing a primary care clinician would get, or is this a test that mostly ordered by specialists like yourself?
I think that it's going to move out into primary care because I have found it to be clinically useful. I think we need to see it out in the clinical arena more. We have some observational epidemiologic data on its usefulness, and you know, I can tell you from my own experience, but we probably need to see it get out there a little bit more. As clinicians get more comfortable with it, I think they may find that it's going to be useful for them.
How do you tell the difference between irregular cycles and menopause?
There's a lot of women out there who do not cycle regularly, and we don't have information on how we can help them predict when menopause will happen. Women who don't get periods, and they also need this information. For example, if you don't get regular menstrual periods, it's very hard to know that you're not pregnant. So a woman who could use, for example, a test like an AMH or a biochemical test that could mark her menopause could also, and we need a little more data before we can, you know, make a recommendation on this, say it's now safe to get rid of your birth control.
Are there scenarios where it could be false positive?
Yes, there are a couple of scenarios. So it is not a perfect test. Women that have suppressed pituitary function or who are on hormonal suppression that's suppressing their ovaries tend to have lower AMH levels. So those levels might result in a false reading. And we don't know yet using a super sensitive assay if it will actually falsely predict menopause. And it's only as good as what it's measuring, because we also know that after a woman has her final menstrual period, she will have a couple of excursions of estrogen here and there for a year or two. And thereafter, most women completely stop cycling and all hormone production shuts down, but not all women. About 10% of women may have another menstrual cycle after their final menstrual period. So it isn't, AMH can't tell us that because it's only measuring the activated follicles. And that's a process that can take 3 to 6 months to happen. So if I get an undetectable AMH now and then 9 months later, a follicle activates, AMH may go up in that person. It doesn't mean that her menopause has been reversed and she's going to cycle again. Those are almost always one-offs. But they can be disturbing to people, and it may appear that, you know, that I wasn't menopausal, but that's probably not the case.
That wraps up this episode of JAMA Clinical Reviews. But we can always continue the conversation online. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. You can listen and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have a minute to review and rate our show, it really helps us know how we're doing, and it makes it easier for other people to find us. This episode also has CME, and you've already done most of the work towards earning credit for this activity. There's still an article to read and a brief quiz. Please go back to the article and read it, and then take the CME quiz. Links to the article and the quiz are available in the description for this episode. Do you want to get all of our Clinical Reviews podcast and CME all in the same place? Check out JN Listen in the Apple Store. It's our new app that has all of our Clinical Reviews podcasts and the ability to get CME from them in the app. No need to go back to the article to get CME. You can also find the entire array of all the JAMA Network podcasts at jamanetworkaudio.com. A very special thanks to today's guest, Dr. Nanette Santoro. And thanks to Lisa Harden, who scheduled her for this JAMA podcast. Today's episode was produced by Daniel Morrow. Our audio team here at JAMA includes Michelle Krasinski, Jesse McPorters, and Mike Berkowitz, our deputy editor for electronic media here at the JAMA Network. Once again, I'm Ed Livingston, deputy editor for clinical reviews and education for JAMA. Thanks for listening.